Good evening and welcome to Point of View. I'm Chris Berg. Thank you so much for joining us. Very excited tonight. Joining us in studio, the great governor of the great state of North Dakota, Doug Burgum, as we wrap up this legislative session. Governor Burgum, always great to have you in studio. We appreciate it very much.
Great to be here. And was that a little slip up with an extra great in front of governor as well?
No, because I think, state, there's great stuff going on, but I think North Dakota is a great state. And thank you for all the hard work. You know, I was remiss not to say this last night to Representative Boucher and Becker, but I know this thing's a grind. So we thank all of you for the hard work that you do throughout the session. And I got to start with what people are saying to me, because you and I both know, for the people that are home watching right now, they're thinking to themselves, okay, we went through this 80-day session. We spent $14 billion plus, but what's in it for me? What's in it for me and my family? How would you respond to that?
Well, let me just start with the $14 billion off the top, because I think that number is kind of an eye-popping number for North Dakota, but a couple of things about that. One is, just one session ago, we started counting tuition and donations of higher education into that number. So it's one of the reasons why it's popped. I mean, there's $2.3 billion that aren't taxes paid by the citizens. It's tuition paid by students. It's donors giving to a university that gets lumped in there. And then the legislature gives them the authority to receive that money and spend it. So that moves that number up artificially by a couple billion dollars.
Where are you line item that number? Because when I look at the numbers, there's more money that was spent in the general fund than last session, maybe not 2013-15, but it's those special funds that it's like $2 billion more. Is that where they're being hid, as I would say?
Well, I wouldn't say hid, but I'm just saying that, whether it's, federal matches, federal funds, you pay a fee to, game and fish that comes in, that matches some federal monies for conservation. All that ends up in the overall spending. But the place to really focus for citizens is, how are we doing on the general fund? And the general fund, we're $2 billion below our peak, which was two sessions ago. We're still $1 billion below where we started when we took office, which was, we went from $6 billion down to $4.3 billion, and now we're back up to $4.8 billion. But that's $2 billion below the $6.8 billion. So what's in it for North Dakotans is we're actually running a more efficient government now than we were a few years ago. So that's key. But then the other thing what's in it is we were able to fund our priorities. So long-term care got an increase, teacher salaries got an increase, state employees got an increase. The things that people would care about on their normal go to school, interact with the state, we've got good funding for that, but we're also taking cost out through efficiencies that allowed us to reinvest back in again. So we didn't raise taxes. And so if you say we funded our priorities, we made some strategic investments, and we didn't raise taxes, that's what's in it for North Dakotans.
So, and I guess priorities are going to be dependent on who you talk to, correct? Because you might say, hey, Chris, yeah, we funded certain things that are your priorities, and you say we're running a more efficient government. When I hear more efficient government, I go, okay, that's going to mean some tax breaks for me. But that really didn't happen unless I was on Social Security or in military. So why not?
Well, I think there were tax breaks. Let's take social services. Social services used to be delivered at the county level. When we came in 2 years ago, there had been an effort to say, hey, can we regionalize this? Can we get involved in a way where we can take some administrative cost out, have more money for the delivery of services? So we're going from 49 discrete county entities down to 19 regional zones. That's going to produce $174 million of property tax savings for the people in North Dakota, because the counties can no longer assess a mill levy against those social services because that's being picked up by the state.
To be fair, though, sir, I mean, before they were doing the buy down, and you guys said, okay, no more buy down, now we're going to take over social services. So it really seems for us, it occurs for us, the average North Dakotan, like you just took money from here and moved it over to this bucket.
Not so. The buy down was checks that were written to political subdivisions, like a city,
right,
would receive a check. Well, then when they got that check, they could go put in new infrastructure on the edge, which might actually raise property taxes, which in many cases it did. So the property tax buy-down had a great name, and then it kind of stopped right after that, because after the great name, property tax buy-down, it never translated. Many places it translated to property tax increases.
But so let me ask you a better question.
But when we take over the social services and deliver that more efficiently, and then the counties can no longer assess that property tax, that's real tax saving, $174 million.
Right, so $174 million sounds like a big number that many people in the state maybe don't have in their bank account. So yep. Again, for the person sent home, that $174 million is going to mean what for me? Like $2 a year, $10 a year?
It would depend on how much property you own in that district.
That's fair. Yep. So yep. Average North Dakotan, what would you say?
I won't say because I don't know what the kind of property the average North Dakota owns. But if you want me to divide 174 million by 776,000 on air, I could do that.
That would be the number. Okay.
Could you
do that right at the top of your head?
We'll just move on. That's what we'll do.
You probably could do it right at the top of your head, couldn't you? You are so mad when it comes to the number, though. It just blows me away. Let's talk about this. The biggest accomplishment, in your opinion, in this session was what?
Well, I think the biggest thing is, again, when we take a look at the needs of the state, coming off this last time, $6 billion down to 4.3, largest cut ever. We had employees that had, state employees, hardworking employees, hadn't had a raise in actually 3 years because there was allotment before that. So, getting back on track there, making sure that we're funding K through 12, more money for long-term care. Those are things that I think everyone would say those are priorities. So we had that all taken care of, but we still had the ability to make some really key strategic investments. $28 million going into a statewide UAS network. I'm going to be the first state in the country that has air traffic control for UAS. And this isn't about aviation. This is about agriculture. It's about energy. It's about pipeline safety. It's about businesses coming here because the only way they can actually experience the future will be in North Dakota. Because this is where you're going to want to be to have that ability to fly beyond line of sight. So, because you have to think of that air traffic controls network like a platform, like a smartphone, and then it depends what apps you put on it. And we'll be able to put all kinds of apps on top of that network for energy and agriculture that will help with precision agriculture, it'll help with our energy industry. And I think we're going to be the envy of every other state because they're going to say, wow, how do these guys end up 5 or 10 years ahead of us having this network?
So I think the biggest miss from what I'm hearing is people would have loved to have seen some kind of more tax relief, right? So let's talk about how this forecasting thing works within our state, because the other piece that I'm hearing is that there's a lot of money that is potentially there, but a prime example is that when the legislature did their forecast for the legacy fund, and there was supposed to be $300 million in earnings there, and all of a sudden, from some magic wand, there's only 100 there. So.
Right.
For a fifth grader, explain to me.
So it's not supposed to be there. It actually is there. I mean, there's money that's there.
There's $300 million there, but we
could
are...
be more like $450 or $500,
actually. But we are being communicated from this document, from the forecasting document, that there's only $100 million there, correct?
Yes.
So but that's the magic wand part. Because for me, you just said, hey, Chris, $174 million divided by 700,000 could be good relief. Well, another $350 million, if you take the $450 minus the number you started about, that could be great relief, too. But magically, I don't know where it goes.
Yeah, but I wouldn't call them... It's not magical or magic wand that artificially understating revenues. I think one of the things that we have as elected officials is a responsibility to be transparent, whether it's 2 years ago when the situation was dire or whether now where the economy is strong. And by the way, thank you to the oil industry, the oil and gas industry, the energy partners. They invested in lowering their break-even point during the downturn.
Yes.
And then because of that, production is up. Prices are up a little. Production is up to, we were 1.4 million barrels a day record in December and January. And how did that happen? It happened because the private sector kept on investing to lower their break-even point. And it's not, so it's like we talk about revenue. People say, oh, the price of oil might go down again. Yes, it goes up and down. It's a commodity. But the amount of production we have, it's like we've taken it to another step level. It's like suddenly we're out of doing 25 bushel wheat. Now we're doing 40 bushel wheat, and we're getting 40 bushels every year, and next year we're going to get 45 and 50 because the production keeps going.
But again, I want to translate that back to our dinner tables for the people sitting at home. And so just for clarity, so what I'm hearing you suggest is that, Chris, you've got legislators that are knowing that there's actually more money that's going to be available, but they're not giving you accurate forecasting numbers, and they're doing this purposely. Why?
Well, I think there's a belief that they can restrict spending by artificially understating revenues.
And thus, then maybe not giving the relief that is potentially could be there.
Right.
Right?
Yeah, because tax relief would be another form of spending. It'd be another way,
exactly.
to use the revenue.
My point is, you said, hey, Chris, look what the oil guys have done, right? Now they've got a lot more production coming out. That's what I've been saying. You and I have talked about the workforce issue we'll get to in a moment. But so let's presume here that the money that they are hiding could eradicate corporate taxes, could eradicate income taxes. That would be a boon for our workforce. That would be a boon for our economy because now it's a four-time multiplier, yes?
Yes.
So why don't they get that?
That'd be a good question for those legislators.
What can you do to more effectively communicate that to them so they get on? Because we had a chance to get rid of income taxes and they said no.
Right. Well, we also had a chance to fix our tremendous liability related to our pension fund that we have. because we have state employees that we have a solemn commitment to, but that thing is underfunded. And we have an opportunity to, if you kick that can down the road, it only costs taxpayers more. The longer you wait to fix a pension fund problem, the more it costs money. And so there are things like that, like tax relief and like fixing a pension fund. Or how about investing in K-12 on time? Our fastest growing districts get paid a year later versus when the students arrive. And so, you know, right here, whether it's called the three W's, Watford, City, Williston, and West Fargo, which I like to call West Metro because it includes Horace, Harwood, a chunk of Fargo, and West Fargo. West Fargo added 460 students last year, this current year, 460 new students. We have 100 school districts that only have 250 students or less. So they like added the student count of like two school districts, and then we don't pay them anything. And this goes back to workforce, because if someone's thinking about a family moving to North Dakota, they may not even get over here and meet a realtor or go, this is a great place to live. They'll go online and Google the school district and
So help me understand this, and I want to get back to something in a moment, but let's go to the education piece. I'm hearing that in Williston, you've got kids that are being taught in closets. The opportunity to do on-time funding was up this session, and it didn't go through, correct?
Right. Well, so, it came right down to last Friday in a conference committee, 4-2, you need to have two votes from each chamber. So they had three from the Senate and one from the House. They came up one vote short having on-time
funding. Interrupt you. Here's my point is that I'm a legislator, okay, and I'm in Fargo, let's say, and I know that in Williston they're being taught in closets. I'm going to have to put up the money at some point, whether it's now or 12 months from now, correct?
Right.
So if I'm sitting here and I see there's kids in Williston being taught in closets and I know I need workforce, I guess what I'm trying to get at is what's missing for the legislature to go, yeah, that's a good idea. We should probably do on-time funding. Like, why isn't that happening?
Yeah, I'm mystified when we have the money, because that doesn't grow government. It's a commitment we have to make that student payment. We're just making it on time versus later. And on the flip side, we actually added more subsidies for the schools that are shrinking. And so we spent about $50 million this biennium on schools that have declining enrollment.
Wait. I want to make sure. So you're telling me that we have West Fargo, Watford City, Williston growing at rapid rates. We're not getting them on-time funding. But schools that have got declining population, we gave them more money?
Yes. And there's a safety net where they have been getting paid at whatever they got in 2013. If they went down from there, they still get paid at those levels. And it's actually two ways, because it's a double safety net. So they get paid the higher of either the absolute dollar in 2013 or
why
the higher.
Why would we do that?
Again, good question for legislators,
okay.
to have that. But we're paying for students that aren't there, and then we're not paying for the ones that are. That's the simple thing. And I think it takes it will take a collective effort by everybody. Legislation passed in the K-12 omnibus bill. There was some great work. There were some courageous legislators. There is a roadmap in there for over the next 6 years to get the declining schools onto the formula, meaning off the subsidies. And there is a roadmap to get the growing schools onto the on-time funding. But the question you'd ask yourself, so if we have that kind of political courage to do it over 6 years, but if the money exists today, then why not at least take care of
exactly.
the on-time funding?
And I know I put the onus on you, so I'm going to put the onus on us, the people of North Dakota. What can we be doing to have more transparency with our legislators so that if there is $350 million or $1 billion or whatever that's getting put in all these pockets, that we can go, wait a second, we want that money either invested by tax relief or some way, shape, or form rather than sit in these little piggy banks?
Well, 2 years ago was the first time where we came up with two forecasts. There's a legislative forecast and an executive forecast. And from the executive standpoint, we're working to be as transparent. We've invested in our transparency website. So we'd encourage people to go to Office of Management Budget, OMB website, all the transparency, and just keep yourself informed about that, because we're in a very strong financial position as a state. And whether it's fixing pension fund, doing on-time funding, or gaining more competitive in terms of how we attract workforce, whether that's with tax incentive, lowering our taxes to do that. There's a lot of different options that we have, and because we should all wake up with gratitude every day because of the strong position our state is in.
One more thing on education, I want to move on. But as you've got a friendship with Bill Gates. He's got a great program working with education, and he's done a lot of research on this. He says, hey, the one variable that can have the single greatest impact on students is having an outstanding teacher.
Mm-hmm.
According to North Dakota United, we right now are 35th in the country in teacher pay. I can't get on board with that. I guess I want to just give you a chance to react to that. What should we be paying teachers more money?
Well, that's a lower number on the chart than I thought we were, because I think on another analysis, if you take a look at analyze what a teacher makes relative to someone with a BA degree, you know, in the state with cost of living, we're in number 7. We're in the top 10. And so depending on which analysis you look at, we've made great gains, we've caught up a bunch, and we're in really good shape. Or the one that you have, of course, that's from a lobbying organization that lobbies for more pay, so they're going to pick a lower number. But I think that's one thing. But we did have a proposal from the executive branch, which is, you know, a teacher incentive for leadership, where we would invest, because right now teachers get paid based on how long they've been there and, you know, years of tenure, and whether or not they've earned additional educational degrees like a master's degree. And so then, but those two things, how long you've been there and where they have the degree, doesn't answer your question of are they great or not. And
correct.
So we were trying to get some flexibility into the hands of the administration to do one-time bonuses for people that were doing great work, engaging in innovation, driving schools forward, and have that flexibility that didn't become a bow wave. If somebody said, this year, I'm an empty nester, my kids just graduated from high school, I got more time, I'm gonna dive in, I'm gonna drive a new program for our school, great. They get a bonus, $1,500 that year to drive a program. The next year they say, hey, I got grandkids now, I don't wanna do it. Then they don't get it. It goes to somebody else who might be 25 years old who's charging ahead and wants to do it. But right now there's very little flexibility for administration to pay people on anything other than educational degree and tenure.
Yeah.
And that's not a great incentive when we're trying to achieve what you have, which is get at the driver that drives the great experience. And we do have a lot of great teachers in North Dakota, but some of them are just sort of stuck in the queue, so to speak, versus us being able to really elevate them up and highlight the innovation and the great work that they're doing.
Well, I know you guys bumped up the per pupil funding this session, and I think every North Dakota, and I don't want to speak for everybody but myself, that if I say, hey, we're going to increase per pupil funding, but proficiencies in English and math are growing, I'd be like, okay, that's a good ROI, but they're just not, and that's where I have an issue with how is that money being out. Let's move on to this. So you mentioned it before about, hey, Chris, there's challenges with how the budgets are being proposed to people, or maybe the transparency around them or whatnot, and I don't know if this would be the right purview for him or not, but then you went and you sort of tied the hands of our state auditor. So maybe an auditor would be a good idea to go out there and have more transparency, which you mentioned is a good thing. I think he's trying to do that. Why tie his hands and not give him more flexibility? Thank you so much, Governor Bergen, for being in studio. Always great to have you here. That was just part one of our interview. There is a lot more to it, so we may play that for you tomorrow night. We'll put it up on social media, but look for part two as well.